Oh, yeah. And I bless every 300 frames per second that they caught that with, because he looks like how I imagine we'll all die if we die suddenly. Just kind of like innocent faced and like, oh, this is that's. Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with that choice.
Yeah, it's a smart choice.
It made me think of Tank Girl, though. Did you remember that scene where the guy breaks the glass in the conference room, and he's talking to his generals, and he's just like, take off your shoes and socks and walk over here. And the guy does it, and he goes, if I were you, I wouldn't have done it. I would have killed me first. And then he ends up killing that guy.
I don't remember that.
It doesn't matter. You don't have to remember Tank Girl as well as I do, because I'm obsessed, but we can sing Walking on Broken Glass now.
We did. When we watched it,
take me from this wreckage,
save me from the blind,
living in an empty room, and it feels just like I'm walking on broken glass.
Walking on broken glass.
Do 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 do. Yeah, Annie Lennox is my hero.
She's amazing. She's wonderful. Okay. And beautiful. Okay, and so McClane like drags these bloody feet, you know,
into the bathroom.
McClane is dragging his feet into the bathroom, bleeding out.
The bad guys make it back to HQ with all the hostage victims
and the detonators.
Yes, and you see long-haired brother, sad brother
Carl.
Oh God, there's that, I called that other guy Carl. It's going to be too hard to remember. Long-haired sad guy baddie.
Yeah.
He's Hans talks to him, and then he's just like, yeah. And he stumps out of the room, and then he like kicks over a drink tray, and Holly's like, oh, he's alive. And Chick is like, what?
How do you know?
He's, only John can drive somebody that crazy.
It's like she's speaking from personal experience.
Yep.
Yeah. And McClane is like nursing his wounds, and Powell's like, hey, what's going on? Everything okay? And he's just like, yeah, just having a moment. And they talk, and they're bonding more. And then Powell gets asked about why he is, you know, just, he's kind of like a, what does he call a flat foot?
A flat foot, somebody who is a desk jockey most of the time.
Yeah. And Powell reveals that he, you know, pulled his gun on a 13-year-old kid, and the gun that the kid had looked real enough, but it wasn't. And he shot the kid, and he is like, I'm never going to draw my gun again.
I mean, like, how incredibly timely is that? I mean, just for our own current history. Like,
yeah, it's relevant.
He said it. He said it plainly. He didn't apologize because he was already sorry about it. He's mm-hmm. like, this is simply where I'm at because of this terrible thing that happened. Right. And I was like, I don't know if they meant for that to hurt my heart a little bit, but I want to hug that man.
I know.
I hope that baby was all right.
So this, it was at this point that, kind of like you, I realized that the hacker had a name, Theo, but in my notes, I just kept calling him hacker because at this point to change it was just unnecessary. The FBI show up and they start, you know, like making all these demands that douchebag chief was, you know, making on Powell. And they are like, yeah, we're just going to go ahead and cut the power to the whole area.
Yeah, it's grid 212, by the way.
Yeah, the guy who's supposed to cut the power, he's doing it in this kind of like, yeah, hey, can you guys like cut the power from this area? And he's like, look, my ass is on the line. I could lose my job and my life.
The reason they want the power cut is because it's the last failsafe for the safe.
The FBI thinks that cutting the power is going to be beneficial for them because it makes them sit in the dark, stirring. But actually what it does is it busts the last lock on the vault.
Because they're not terrorists, they're thieves.
Mm-hmm.
So as the power goes off,
the vault opens.
If you are not sick of Ode to Joy at this point, you need to understand that up until now, it's only been like somebody humming or somebody playing the cello or some like muted Muzak version of it. This is the full, I don't remember the orchestra which plays it, but it's like the na, 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 na. It's the full blast of the song, and you haven't had it at all until this moment.
There's like lights that come up. There's like the way the camera pans and the lights, and it's
what
like.
What about Hans? His eyes.
He's looking at that vault in a way that I kind of want him looking at me.
The that to be the background on your computer. It's just Hans gazing into the vault.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And then at the bottom, you could write always.
Oh, ow. I do have, like, similar feelings. Yeah. Anyways.
Oh, I also wrote down, I'm kind of, like, happy for the bad guys right now. I'm really glad they got in there.
Hey, guess what? It was a Christmas miracle. And Hans had faith. There's like certain characters who have like very specific arcs. And I kind of love that about this movie. So they get into the vault. They grab the money and they see some of the artifacts. And there's like a painting. And
we get a load of just how loaded they're about to be.
Mm-hmm.
But also we cut back to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Where Bruce has taken off his tank top so he could bandage his foot with it. He a little oily. He a little dirty.
Yeah, that's okay.
He's a little sweaty, too.
That's okay. I mean, that is okay, right?
I mean, if my face looked like Hans looked into the vault, or you looking at Hans, I'm just admitting the truth here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're here to do on this podcast, guys.
Admit the truth, or at least our version of it. Let's see. Both the FBI and Hans think that they have the upper hand. They're eventually going to go to explain their plans. The FBI says, yeah, we're going to go ahead. And when they get up to the roof with the helicopters, that's when we're going to get them. And then Hans says, when they get up to the roof, they're going to have a surprise in the way of, you know, explosions. And when they go sifting through the rubble, what does he say? When
a month later, when they're still sifting through the rubble,
they realize what's happened. We're going to be earning 20% on a beach.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And interesting fact, news reporters have found out John McClane's address and they go to the house, blackmail Paulina with, you know, calling.
We're going to call INS if you don't let us in and talk to these people's children.
Yeah. And the news reporters pretty much everything up. So McClane goes up to the roof and he realizes what those explosives were. He sees the detonators and the C4 and he tries to tell Powell that it's a double cross. But that's when Carl gets him.
And bare-chested fisticuffs ensue. In my notes, I called them underutilized.
I just always think of like a T-Rex, like, you know, T-Rex arms that are like really close in. Pew, 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 pew. That poor T-Rex.
It's just a lot of like throwing each other around. It's not a bad fight scene.
So Hans is collecting things from his little like base at Holly's office. And he sees that the news reporters.
I just want my mom and dad to come home because it is Christmas. And my name is Lucy. And I'm played by a lady named Taylor. And I'm the cutest little kid Naomi has ever seen.
Hans sees that this girl looks familiar. He looks at...
I believe it's a whip-around look.
A whip-around? He checks this one picture that has been face down the entire time, and he makes the connection that Holly is actually married to McClane. And that's when he goes and is just like, take all of the hostages up to the roof, but not her. And he grabs her by the...
He seemed like he was going to be so nonviolent up until then.
Yeah, he is still a bad guy, ladies and gentlemen, despite how much I care for him.
In my notes, I wrote, Hans is, he's the stupid lucky guy in this. Like, he keeps having stupid lucky shit happen to him.
Yeah. The hostages get up to the roof. Hans grabs Holly. Let's see. Oh, Carl and McClane are still fighting. And the helicopters are coming to the tower. And
the FBI guys are exchanging, like, you know, like, they're doing their little back and forth. And it's not terribly hilarious. Mm-hmm. Some people love the Johnson agents the most. Johnson and Johnson, not related. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're as they're coming up to land on the roof, they're like, losing 20-25% of the hostages, that's acceptable.
Right. Like, at this point, they've just kind of been playing things by the book. And this is where their douchebaggery really gets shown. They're willing to let people die. They're going to consider that an acceptable loss. And it would be easy enough for them to go ahead and just blame that the terrorists had just, you know, killed these people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And McClane and Carl are fighting. Helicopters coming in. Their fight ultimately. Like, there are moments in the fight where McClane's like, I'm going to cook you and eat you. And I'm just sort of like, what?
There's also a lot of, during the fight, during the loud parts, there's a whole lot of swearing, too. He's like, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah. And but McClane does actually do away with Carl.
Even after he's shot in the back.
Yeah. And he goes up to the roof knowing that it's going to explode. And
he hangs Carl by a chain. If you pay better attention than I do, you can see the actual character actor watching the stuntman die on the chain. But I missed it every time.
And which is just a little bit more.
We got the Blu-ray, so maybe it got edited out.
Maybe.
Maybe.
So McLean goes up to the roof. He's trying to get the, he's like, where's Holly? Where's Holly? And
she's down there with them. She's down there with the bag
in the vault on the 30th floor. And he's just like, get off the roof. It's going
to
explode.
You think the pregnant lady who's the only one talking to him would be like, righto, chief, and like just head down the stairs, but she kind of stares and does it back and forth for a minute.
And then he has to like shoot at the air to get them to actually run.
And then the FBI guys are like, oh, look, the guy shooting on the roof. He's probably a bad guy, which is not a bad leap.
Right.
But it's the wrong one.
Mm-hmm. And McLean gets off. He's trying to get off the roof too because he knows it's going to explode. And he like ties a fire hose around his waist and like makes this whole like leap down to a window that he easily shoots out and you know, makes it back into the party room that is like all water and fake.
Yeah, it's supposed to be one of the rooms that is fashioned after
Frank Lloyd Wright. Yeah, I can talk.
You are right. Please leave that in. She corrected me because I could not remember that name. I said 20 times 50 minutes ago. It's supposed to look like the waterfall house he did.
Mm-hmm.
I think it does all right, but mostly it looks like he's fighting through the jungle. And after the FBI guys, before they died, were like, this is like just like Saigon. And the guy's like, I was in middle school.
I don't find like their exchange like incredibly necessary.
Well, we're with them for such a short time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, for the action of the movie, there's like a lot of these extraneous points that it kind of means something to the main characters, and it kind of feels like it's put in there just so they have something that can like further.
And it was placed off. This movie was based off a novel, so there's lots of little things that we don't see at all. Like when my notes say, okay, so just because they're an up and up in the FBI, they're automatically a sharpshooter? Like, is that how that works? I doubt it, but they probably have a lot more backstory in the novel.
Right, right.
And by the way, the novel takes place over 3 days. So this one is one night. And the script was changed almost constantly throughout the entire filming.
Right. And to do an adaptation from a book to a movie, there's a lot of stuff that's going to have to get shrunk down because they're two different medias. But McLean goes in.
Don't forget the dramatic tree falling over as he climbs those stairs. Because that's about when my brain broke.
So McLean goes from the roof into the office and then makes his way to the vaults where he sees some of the hostages are like going down through the stairwell. And there's like only three bad guys at this point. Hans, Theo, and like one and the receptionist guy that are left like at the vault, like getting things ready so they can make their escape.
Any other ones would be watching the hostages?
Well, I don't know, because the hostages are like making their escape.
They're
now
very vague. You know, there are 12 guys, but we haven't done a 1 + 2 + 2 + 1 moment.
Yeah. But
this is the point where Argyle moves his
Argyle's just kind of like parked in the garage, and we see Theo take the
ambulance out of the moving truck, because that's how they're going to escape this really traumatic scene. They're going to get away in an ambulance, which I don't think would have fit 12 guys, but hey.
Maybe they're kind of thinking that some of the guys are going to be up on the roof when the explosion goes.
Oh.
I don't know. Maybe there was going to be a double cross.
Or maybe there was another way that we just didn't know they were going to get out.
That's a possibility. But we see Theo like getting everything ready, and Argyle sees him, and he is in a very advantageous position to, you know, do something heroic.
Yo. And then I think it pops back up and we find out that McLean only has 2 bullets left. And what's he going to do? But then it jumps back down to Argyle versus Theo, which might be my favorite moment of the entire film.
Yeah. Do you want to say it? Do you want to talk
about it? Okay, so what happens is Theo is backing up he has to be the driver and the tech support and the logistics guy. Bless Theo's heart, because his little cheaty self would be in my pocket right next to Argyle. But Theo backs the ambulance up to the loading dock so that they can get all the money and moneyed items into it. And then Argyle's like, without any real communication, he's just like, oh, I gotta get these guys.
He knows what's going on.
Yeah. So he runs this limo that is not his into this ambulance. Like, you see Theo go, what? Oh, and like he ducks, right? And then Argyle runs into the car, backs up a little bit so there's space. He runs into the driver's side door where Theo is. And it's up against an embankment. The thing's not going to move. But he backs up a little bit. And then when Theo pops back up again, Argyle is just like, boop, like just knocks him the fudge out. And you just see him hit the the ground. So you know a couple things. One, he's out. He's down for the count. When you see the skewed glasses face on the ground, he's done for, especially because we're on my last page of notes.
Yeah.
And you don't see him again. But he's in the basement. The building doesn't burn down. Theo's safe.
Yeah.
And Argyle won the day.
Yeah, he did.
Roll credits.
That's all that matters. And then from there, we see that McLean, he has like two guns, but only two bullets. And so that's the only thing that we see with one of the guns. We don't see if there's any bullets in the machine gun.
Yeah, but you kind of assume if he's worried about the handgun, the
machine gun, maybe.
Machine gun's done, yeah.
Yeah. So he holds that and he's just like, ah! And he's, you know, like dirty from head to toe.
Shirtless.
Bloody, sweating, probably.
Glistening in all the firelight.
Yeah, yeah. And he's holding the gun, but Hans grabs Holly and they have their nice little exchange where he's like, okay, drop the gun. And he's like, okay, I'll drop the gun.
And Carl.
The receptionist.
The receptionist guy has a gun on him too.
Right. And so what Hans reiterates the yippee-ki-yay line.
And then he like slowly brings his gun down.
And McLean starts laughing like, ha ha ha, ha ha ha, ha 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 ha. And everybody starts laughing. And that's when he pulls and he's like, holy duck. And he has this.
She's got the wherewithal. She's like, down.
Yeah, she knows what's up. And McLean grabs a taped gun that is to his back, shoots Hans, shoots the receptionist. And Hans like is stumbling and backing up and he crashes through the window. But
the only window that breaks on the first shot.
But he still has enough time to like grab Holly by the wrist to keep himself from falling through this window. He's holding on to her wrist, which there's a foreshadowed watch that comes up at the beginning of the movie.
Show her the watch you got.
And but he never actually gets to see the watch because what we see is the watch getting undone as because
it's all that Hans can really hold on to, her weak little delicate bird wrists.
And they're struggling to get the watch off. And when they do, Hans drops. And factoid number whatever, they told Alan Rickman that they were going to release on 3, but they actually released on 2. And so his reaction that they caught on camera is genuine.
Oh, yeah. And I bless every 300 frames per second that they caught that with because he looks like... Like how I imagine we'll all die if we die suddenly. Just kind of like innocent faced and like, oh, this is that's, nope. Mm-hmm.
In this case, 3 was right out. No, shall you end?
Oh, yeah. Goodness. So then, the McLeans are now back together, sweaty and bloody.
They're walking on through.
They cut to the kiss. Oh,
yeah,
right away.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have to just mention that I know he's gross and I probably wouldn't care if I was in that moment, but as someone viewing that moment, when he's just rubbing his bloody hands through her hair and just kissing all over her face with his sweaty face. And I just, no one's had a bathroom break and there's a lot of 80s hairspray going on and
it makes you uncomfortable.
It makes me really uncomfortable. You don't like it. That's not good hygiene.
Mm-hmm. But they do, you know, they get out of it. They get down to the ground floor. A reporter comes showing right up. And Holly has, like, the best moment, in my opinion, where she punches the reporter because...
She knows.
She knows. And Powell and McLean, they see each other, hug passionately.
Yes, I wrote Bruce meets Carlo. So sorry.
But then there's like rising from the ashes. Carl, like a phoenix, is not dead and starts going for McLean until we see Powell pull his gun and he fires on Carl like 5 times.
It's a Christmas miracle.
Yeah.
He can kill people with his gun.
Okay. And Argyle comes crashing out of the garage and Powell, you know, pulls it over there and McLean says, no, 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 he's with me.
Busted limo driving away as they make out in the back is this Western riding off into a sunset that they've alluded to this entire film.
Mm-hmm.
Can I tell you what makes me mad about the end of this movie? It's when they play Ode to Joy in German during the credits. And I want to imitate it, but I don't know German. But just know that it's the same song for at least the 7th or 8th time.
So is it something like German, 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 German? I will say this. This movie left me feeling a little bit like the last Harry Potter film. You know, it was like, it was okay.
But it took away your Rickman.
It took away Alan Rickman. And I was just like, I don't know. Don't know how I can. The best thing about this film, the absolute best thing about this film, all jokes aside, are that there are like, what is it? Like six characters who have like these very specific arcs, like McClane coming to terms with the fact that his wife wants a successful career through the whole lens of like having to deal with
regardless of who he is, she has this plan for her life,
right? But that is like the emotional arc that he's going through over the course of the movie. Powell is accepting that he can't change the past and it's always better to move on. Hans, he's like planning off this elaborate heist, but he keeps faith in the plan even when things don't go his way. Carl is on a revenge mission for, you know, the guy who killed his brother. And it's just like,
Harry's trying to see how much coke he can snort before the end of the 2 hour and some odd minute runtime.
You know, okay. Argyle, he gets put into a dangerous situation that he can't escape from, but he still acts heroically when he is presented with an opportunity to do so. And it's just like, there's these like these little tiny like personal arcs. For me, it really makes the movie. And it really like even though it's this action film, it's like, if you're going to do an action film, at least have like some level of emotional storytelling.
As much as I like watching people kick other people square, the mm-hmm. fact that they took the time to develop the reasons why I should care. I mean, mm-hmm. not caring about the action makes it less enjoyable, you know?
Right.
Well, that didn't make any sense as a sentence. But if there's no emotional pull behind it, there's no reason for me to be engaged as an audience member.
I would not say that this is like my favorite action movie. It's up there because actions are like pretty low on the scale of like the kind of movies that I like. Mm-hmm. I will say this. There's a movie called Hot Fuzz. Simon Pegg, Nick Frost.
I mean, it's hard though, because this is a straight movie and that one's spoofy.
Yeah, but even still, Hot Fuzz has like so much emotional depth. And you see that buddy comedy, you know, aspect, but you also see like there's emotion in it. And like the characters have not just reasons why they do it. There's just like a lot of layers to
it. You're not
going to
find fault with me for the Cornetto trilogy. You're mm-hmm. just not going to.
Right. Yeah. Because there's like thought that's put into the characters. And I feel like Die Hard definitely does that.
Well, and it was new to, I think, its whole. I mean, there's always been action, but this film is compelling because of when, where, how, and who is involved. Mm-hmm. And I think that it was in a time where that was much more haphazardly put together. Now, they'd spent a lot of time on the script, spent a lot of time in development, but when it came to shooting it and getting it out there, there's continuity things that I think that were nailed, because I think even though this movie had a budget of $68 million.
That sounds high for like 88.
But it was all about effects. It wasn't necessarily about the other aspects of the film. And with Cornetto, you can get away with a lot more CGI. And that could cut down your budget a lot so mm-hmm. that you could focus on things like having a director of continuity, or you could have somebody who, you know.
Yeah. But I still, budget aside, I feel like it doesn't take a lot to go ahead and just, you know, put just a few layers. Like this movie doesn't like go too, it doesn't dive too heavily. It just kind of like, but it still puts it in there. And I think it's like, it's very telling, and it does make for a better action film. Mm. And so that's why it just like, if there's ever like one thing that sticks out for me mm-hmm. and I'm going to talk about it, that's what I would talk about when talking about Die Hard, the, not just Alan Rickman's wonderfulness.
I would, in line with you, I would definitely point out individual performances. I think those taken alone are really what make this movie for me. And I've watched a lot of horror, so like the deaths and stuff aren't like super exciting, but definitely the action, with the focus on the action, is interesting. I think that I would rather talk about the individual characters and what they are going through. Who would you recommend this movie to?
I would say I could recommend this movie to anybody who likes action. I don't know. I mean, I don't have anybody in my immediate circle of people that I know.
When I found out you hadn't seen it, you were my top pick. I was like, well, then you got to see this one.
Yeah. Well, it's, yeah, but I don't know. Like, I mean, I can think of a few people, but like as for like a general specific type of people, if you like an action film with like a little, a little bit of funny moments, a little bit of like, you know, character growth, mm-hmm. a little bit of like, you know, just sprinklings yeah. of, you know, other aspects of films like comedy and taking things seriously. And hey, if you're looking for a Christmas movie that you didn't know was a Christmas movie.
I mean, if you can't watch It's a Wonderful Life, one more time. Mm-hmm. But I really like getting to share it with my nephew today. Like, mm-hmm. that was a lot of fun. I liked being able to be like, here comes a part, which, you know, was obnoxious when I was his age. But now that I'm older, it's really great to be like, look, don't take your eyes off the screen because mm-hmm. something awesome is about to happen. And I think he really liked it. I think he enjoyed that. And that's one of the things, that's probably why we're here today, is like sharing movies with people is super enjoyable because unlike sharing your own, like, history with somebody, mm-hmm. you're getting to share the exact same set, if not interpretation, but you're getting to share these same images and then getting to spar with somebody off of that. And that's a way to engage without, you know, being too personal. Or that's why you should always see the movie before you go out for dinner on a date, because it's yeah. fun to talk about. Like, right. I want to talk about Hans more. Who was he before? Should I read the book? I probably will not.
Probably not.
It's the second in the series of books. Mm-hmm. But it's the first in the series of movies. I don't know.
Yeah. It's always nice when you have your own personal reactions by yourself. But it is also enjoyable sitting and seeing someone else react to it. I think it's always merited to watch a movie on your own time if you want to absorb it. Mm-hmm. If you don't necessarily want it in just like running in the background. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I think it's always important that we look at the media we watch and actually like think about what we're watching. Mm-hmm. And it's good to see, 'cause like when someone else watches something, it's, they're going to see it differently than you.
And do you think that influences you? So you should absorb the media in multiple ways, multiple times?
Well, I think you should absorb it on your own time, but it's always important to get other people's perspective.
The funniest thing today was when I was reacting to a certain moment and you're like, okay, so I can only see you in silhouette 'cause you turned out the lights. But like you were describing my face journey to me, like
it was this like, okay, the way that we were set up today, we were in a darkened room, I know, and there was this light behind, like Naomi was like to my left, and then there was a light to her left, and so like I'd look over her at her when she was talking about stuff, and I'd be like, there are like lights over there, and I'm just seeing the silhouette, and it was
grossed
nice.
Out. I think it was the
it was oh sorry the I didn't
specific,
mean to
the specific moment I'm thinking of was when I was rubbing blood. And spit all over her, and I'm just like, ah,
I can see your silhouette, Naomi.
But I'm forever looking at, when I'm out on a movie with Jonathan, I'm always looking to see how he's reacting. Maybe not to see if we're on the same page or see if we're in different places or just check it in emotionally as you do. Like, I just want to see if he's in it. Are we in on the same joke? Did he think that was funny as much as I did? You know, like, I definitely enjoy consuming media with other people.
I'm talking about. It's so funny.
That's not true. It's more like nudging him and being like, did you get that one? Was it funny? Did you like that one? Was it real good? Are you having a good time, soldier? Guys. What shocked me?
Oh, I like that. So we're going to do like a...
We did the thing we like.
Yeah, yeah. Now what did you applaud at? We've just finished what we applauded at.
Yeah. Lydia liked...
Character development.
I liked... Oh, I guess character development. I like talking about the characters and stuff. Mm-hmm. What appalled me. What shocked me.
Yeah.
I applauded already. what shocked me. Goodness. I guess...
For me, it was how black men were represented in this movie.
Oh, yeah. They were represented pretty well. Like, neither of them die. None of them die.
They're both intelligent people who are... This isn't that crazy. I mean, there are a number of minorities. You got... I mean, in that you've got three...
Well, you got the three black guys. You got an Asian guy who actually...
A couple Asian guys,
yeah. But, like, the black characters, they're not, like, cliches.
Even during the decade of black men cliches.
Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense.
That's a good one.
When you think of like Total Recall and his kind of black sidekick in
the taxi driver,
he was just this, oh, come on, man, I got kids to feed.
Yeah, and they turned out to be super evil.
Yeah.
Well, kind of, mostly evil.
Even Theo, even though he's a bad guy, is super smart.
And he kind of breaks like the nerd mold with, you know, being smart at computers, but not being a super nerd about it. He knows he's a nerd about football.
I didn't catch all the football references. I gotta be honest.
But there's like at least three instances where he like makes references to football lingo and jargon.
I'll give it to you, but I still, that falls under what I applaud about it. We're talking about what we're shocked about, right?
Like, yeah, but it's not necessarily a bad, not necessarily
it was surprising. That's what you said.
Yeah, surprising. Oh, I see. Yeah.
We're still in development, applauders.
we're still figuring our shit out.
I think what I found shocking was just how evil I didn't find Hans.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Not overall.
Yeah, I kind of like how, like, the real douchebags kind of got the justice in some way. You know, like, you get the FBI guys who are like, yeah, it's okay if 20% of the hostages die. They die.
They're probably 20% of the FBI force that showed up.
Yeah. Hans dying was kind of fitting, though I kind of wanted him to survive. I really wanted him to just, you know, survive and maybe, like, run off with Holly. I know. I'm horrible. But I kind of wanted him to get away a little bit.
That's okay. I'm all right with that. Mm-hmm. I would have been all right with Hans living.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's nice to have nuanced bad guys. I mean, even tall, blonde, long hair, scary dude, Carl. He had a reason. He didn't like that his brother, scary looking Dahmer kid, was dead. So, I mean, I give him points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to say what shocked me was the nuanced villains who were still kind of like evil for the, they're like kind of enjoying themselves, even though they were like unapologetically evil.
Mm-hmm. But when they opened that vault, you didn't feel sad.
No, I felt happy. I felt so happy.
Yeah.
I felt jealous.
Well, applauders, we have been recording for quite some time, and I know you've waited for weeks for this to come out. So we hope you've enjoyed it. We hope that you have journeyed with us, that you are enjoying this movie now, perhaps, or if you've watched it just recently, and or if you've decided that you're not going to watch it ever. You're missing out, I feel personally, a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's definitely worth a view. We want to thank always and forever our editor and producer, Jonathan, whose bumper you're about to hear, but whose praise I'm about to sing, because he is lovely. He puts in hours and hours of work so that you, I mean, if you found us obnoxious at all, please know that that was all us, and he cut out so much.
Oh, God. He works really hard, you guys, so, you know.
Merry Christmas to you, and or whatever. Let's say it together.
Merry Christmas.
Jonathan, say it too. Come on.
Merry Christmas.
Or whatever you happen to be celebrating this holiday season.
Goodwill toward men.
And women.
Thank you for gifting us with yet another listen in part 3 of our review of Die Hard, a Plotter. We hope we've joined you in some great activities over the month of December, and that you're ready for more from Shocked and Applaud in 2019. Hey, this is your audio engineer and away from keyboard probably eating ham, Jonathan. Thanking you for joining us as we close out our first season of conversational comedy in media's most peculiar picks. We have a lot of great ideas for season 2, but the truth is, we're still in the early stages of meeting our audience goals needed to promote the show through its infancy. That's why it's so important to us that you would even consider sponsoring our growth monthly through a patronage of $1 as a clapper or $5 as an applauder. We reached over 100 listens overall through our review of Guillermo del Toro's Pan's Labyrinth and continue to see strong listenership through December with our review of Die Hard. But as a Patreon applauder, you're helping us purchase advertising space in search engines and social media platforms, so that we can meet future goals, improve the show's quality, extend the number of reviews we produce, and keep advertisements out of everything that we circulate. You can find more details about becoming a Patreon subscriber to the show by visiting shockedandapplaud.com or visiting patreon.com/shockedandapplaud. We're on Twitter at shockedapplaud, Facebook at shockedandapplaud, or email us directly at shockedandapplaud@gmail.com. We'd love to thank you personally in a future episode for supporting us, and we might even do that just for sharing a posted episode with your friends, along with what you liked about it or what shocked you. Season 2 begins in only 1 week on New Year's Day, And although I can't tell you what we'll be reviewing, I can tell you we won't be leaving the 80s behind anytime soon. We still have a lot of our childhood left to make fun of. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.